Thank you so much. Rabbi Salbaum, thank you all for joining me, allowing me to join you this evening. Without question, one of the highlights of Shavuos is Kabbalas HaTorah, Seres HaDibros. That was the first 10 mitzvot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to give Klal Yisrael. Now, if you think about it, there must have been a reason why these 10 were chosen. Of all 613, these were the first 10 that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Listen up, Jews. This is what I want you to hear." So think about some of them. A lot of them make a lot of sense. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, you have to believe in Hashem. That's the first of anything. Of course, that's the ABC. You can't serve avodah zarah. I understand that also. You can't kill. You can't kidnap. All of these, I understand so easily why they're so critical, so important. These are the first mitzvot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Klal Yisrael. But what is somewhat troubling or perplexing at first is the tenth. The tenth of the Aseres HaDibros. Lo sachmod beisrei echa, lo sachmod eishesrei echa. You're not supposed to be jealous of what someone else has and you don't. Now, why is that so important? Of all 613, this is the one you have to tell me? Part of the first 10? I'm not allowed to be jealous of my friend's iPod, iPad, iPhone, PlayStation, Xbox. All I have is a DS. I can't be jealous of what she has? What's wrong with that? I'm not taking it. I'm not hurting her. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just inside. I'm resentful. How come I can't have all that great stuff? What's wrong with that? Okay, it's not nice. It's not good midos. But put it somewhere else in the list. Put it number 500. Number 10. That's right up there with the top 10. What's so critical about that? Why is that so important to know at the very beginning of Kabbalas HaTorah? But to answer that question, we first need to ask a different question. Also, on the same lo sachmod, the same isser min haTorah to be jealous. And this is the question you have here in source number 2, asked by the Ibn Ezra, one of the Rishonim, one of the famous Meforshim on Chumash. And he asks a very obvious question. Kadosh Baruch Hu is telling me, now that you're Mekabel the Torah, here are the things that you must do, here are the things that you can't do. I understand I can't kill. Okay, I won't kill anybody. I understand I can't kidnap. Okay, I won't kidnap anybody. But how can a Kadosh Baruch Hu tell me, don't feel jealous? It's not my fault if I feel jealous. He made me this way. Just a feeling. How can I control a feeling? If I see that my friend has her own bedroom, her own bathroom, and I have to share my bedroom with my sisters and my bathroom with my brothers and my parents also, it's not my fault. I can't help feeling jealous of her. So how can the Torah command me not to be jealous, to control a feeling? How is that possible? And the Ibn Ezra answers, I'll give you the trick. I'll teach you how it's possible to control your feelings. This is a famous, famous Mushal story that he gives. Maybe we'll modernize it just a bit. I don't know if anybody here has heard of the name Mrs. Kate Middleton. Or if you did, you're too afraid to say. Okay. So don't tell me. I'll just tell you briefly that she is somebody who married the Prince of England somewhat recently. Now, this woman, his name is now Mrs. Kate or Mrs. Catherine. What's the last name officially? Regardless. What? Windsor. Mrs. Catherine Windsor. Thank you. She now does not have to work for the rest of her life. She gets to live her entire life in a palace. She gets to have professional chefs cooking every meal for the rest of her life. She gets to go on any vacation she wants to anywhere in the world on her private jet. And her husband doesn't have to work either. And she gets to meet the President of the United States. She gets to do all sorts of very, very fascinating things with her life. But I doubt that anyone here is really jealous of her. Why? I'm sure perhaps we at times would think about how interesting it might be to live in a palace or have professionally cooked meals for us at every lunch and dinner, how interesting it might be to fly to some exotic island and relax for a couple of weeks undisturbed. Perhaps we think about that, but we're not jealous of her. We don't resent her. Oh, she's so lucky that she got to marry him, not me. Why not? Well, for starters, Prince William is not Jewish. So obviously, you could never think of marrying him. It's not possible. Even if he was Jewish, he lives in England and we live here in America. Also, another reason why it's not possible. But there you have it. So that's really the answer to the question. You're not jealous of Princess Catherine who married Prince William because it's not possible for you to marry Prince William. He's also older than we are. All those reasons. He's not Jewish, lives in England, he's much older than I am. For all those reasons, it's not possible to marry the prince. And when something is not possible, as fascinating as it might sound, and as interesting as it might be to live a life of a princess, but if it's not possible, you don't even think about it for yourself, and you're not jealous of someone else who gets it. What are you jealous of? You're jealous of something that was within reach. I could have done it. I came so close, and she got it instead of me. I could have scored highest in the test, but I didn't. Maybe then I might feel jealous of someone who did. I was so close to winning the race, and I just lost by a few steps. I'm in second place. Maybe then you could feel a little jealous that you didn't get first place. You're jealous of something when it's possible. It's within reach. You can imagine it happening, and then you don't get it. Something which is not possible at all. Maybe you think about how fascinating it is, but you're not jealous of something that's not possible to get. And that says Ibn Ezra's the secret. How is it possible not to feel jealous of a friend who has all those goodies, the iPad, the iPhone, and I don't? How can I not feel jealous of her? So Ibn Ezra says, in the middle of source number 2, that middle line, he says, Kacha kol maskil tzarech sheyeda. Every intelligent person must know. Ki isha yafa o mamon lo yimtze'enu adam ba'avur chachmaso v'dayto. You can't get something in this world just because you're smart and you're trying to get it. Rak ka'asher chalak lo Hashem. Person can only get, doesn't matter what it is, anything you might want, you can only get it if Hashem decides I want you to have it. But, says Ibn Ezra, if Hashem doesn't want you to get it, for whatever reason, he didn't give you your own bedroom, your own bathroom, your own iPhone, your own iPad, for whatever reason, he didn't give you all those good stuff. Then says Ibn Ezra, that means Hashem didn't want to give it to me. I don't know why, but he decided he did not want to give it to me. And if Hashem decided he doesn't want to give it to me, it's not possible to get it. It's like marrying the prince. Not possible. And if something is not possible to get, then like we said before, you're not jealous of someone who marries the prince because you never thought it possible for you to marry the prince. The same way, says Ibn Ezra, you shouldn't be jealous of what someone else has and you don't. Because if Hashem didn't give it to you, that means he doesn't want you to have it for whatever reason. And if he doesn't want me to have it, it's not possible for me to ever get it, no matter what I do. And once I recognize that it's not possible, oh, it's like marrying the prince. I'm not jealous of the fact that she has that and I don't. It's not possible for me to get it. Why should I be jealous? That's a very, very important lesson that Ibn Ezra teaches us. And one of the questions we have here on the sheet is the following. There is another Isser in the Torah. Don't take revenge and don't even bear a grudge. What does that mean, bear a grudge? Any of the girls know what bearing a grudge means? Any of the brave girls who know what bearing a grudge means? Yes. Excellent. Very good. You resent somebody in your heart because he publicly embarrassed me. Or she publicly embarrassed me. Or they did something really nasty to me. And I'm upset by it. And I resent it. Now, I don't do anything back because I can't take nakama. Can't take revenge. But I resent it. Every time I see that girl in the hallway, what do I say? Really upset inside. Just bothers me that she did that to me. So the question can be asked on that Isser as well. How is it possible not to feel angry that somebody did something bad to me? Someone publicly insults me. How is it possible to control my feelings not to bear a grudge? But according to the Ibn Ezra, we just said, what's the answer? Anybody know? Anybody think of the answer? Why or how it's possible for the Torah to tell me you can't bear a grudge? How can I control that feeling of not being angry at someone who hurt me, who insulted me? What would you say based on the answer we just saw in the Ibn Ezra to the first question we discussed? The answer is because if a person recognizes that Hashem decides what happens to me and what doesn't happen to me, if a person recognizes that anything that happens to me, good or bad, is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided it was supposed to happen to me for whatever reason, then why should I be angry at this person? Maybe that person did something wrong by insulting me, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will perhaps take care of business with that person one day. But why should I be angry? If it happened to me, what does that mean? It means Hashem wanted it to happen to me. If Hashem wants it to happen to me, so why am I being angry at this person who did it to me? It's the same idea. Recognizing that Hashem is in control of everything that I have and everything that happens to me is what allows me then to control my feelings. Don't be angry at that person. Hashem wanted it to happen to me. Don't be jealous of what that person has. Hashem doesn't want me to have it. Very, very important lesson. Now, the problem, though, is as follows. If I were to ask you then, what does happiness mean? Happiness. People sometimes tend to think of happiness as having what you want, right? I'm happy when I have what I want. That makes me happy. Makes sense, doesn't it? But if we just explained that you can't always have what you want, you only get what Hashem gives you, then what does happiness then mean? Can I ever be happy then if I don't always have what I want? What does happiness mean? The answer is, happiness is not having what you want. Happiness is wanting what you have. You know what that means? That means that when I recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu only gave me this and not that, I'm happy with it because Hashem gave me what I need. I realize Hashem decided this is what I need. I need nothing more than this. And so I'm happy with that. That's what Hashem decided I need in my life. Hashem decided I need to share a bedroom with my sister and a bathroom with my brother. Then that's what I need in this life. That's what I'm going to get. And I should be happy with it. I want what Hashem gives me. Happiness is not having what you want, it's wanting what you have. But that is something that most people don't understand. I assume that perhaps you've heard before of Declaration of Independence, right? I'm not sure what grade they teach it here. I grew up in Toronto, so we didn't discuss those kinds of things. But here in this country, I assume it's discussed earlier on in one's education. Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson says that all men are created equal. They are all endowed with certain unalienable rights. And among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, these are very memorable words. Perhaps one of the most famous words in the English language. But everyone knows that a good writer chooses his words very carefully. And when you write, you're supposed to be consistent. Wouldn't it make more sense to say every man is given certain rights, including life, liberty, and happiness? Why life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Maybe he should have said pursuit of life, pursuit of liberty, pursuit of happiness. But he didn't. Why not? The answer is very simple. Life and liberty you can automatically attain. You're born, you have life. You live in this country, you have liberty. Happiness, if you think happiness is having what you want, you know what's going to happen? You'll spend your whole life pursuing it, running after it. You'll never, ever get it. Because if happiness is having whatever you want, the more you get, the more you want more. You're never going to be happy. So if an American thinks that happiness means having what you want, that's why he's allowed to pursue happiness for as long as he lives. Pursuing means you keep running after it, and you keep running after it, and you keep running after it for as long as you live. That's why Americans believe in pursuit of happiness. Anybody here ever heard of Jack Whitaker? Anybody? Jack Whitaker? Fathers? Grandfathers? Jack Whitaker, anybody? I don't think so. Maybe he does write in his spare time. I'm not sure. That's not what he's famous for. Jack Whitaker is famous because back in 2003, he won what was at that time the largest lottery in U.S. history. $315 million. All by himself. No office groups or families and friends. One man, one ticket, $315 million. That's a lot of money. You can build quite a few houses with your own bathroom for that kind of money. Lots of iPhones, iPods, iPads. Lots of good stuff with that kind of money. Whatever you want, you can have if you have $315 million. And 2 years after he won that lottery, a reporter asked Mrs. Jewel Whitaker, his wife, "So, new, it's been 2 years." And she said, "I wish he never would have bought that ticket. I wish I had torn it up while I still had the chance." Can you imagine? They're not very happy, the Whitakers. Because happiness is not having what you want. If that's what happiness is, no matter how much you have, you can have $315 million, you won't be happy. You'll be even more miserable, as they apparently are. Happiness is wanting what you have. Everyone knows, Eizehu Ashir HaSameach B'Chelko. Someone who is happy with his portion, that's someone who is truly wealthy. Not the Jack and Jewel Whitakers of this world. They're actually now among the most miserable of people. In fact, there's a fascinating book written by an author named Greg Easterbrook called The Progress Paradox. And what he describes in that book essentially is how life has gotten so much better for Americans over the past generation or two or three. We have larger homes, we own our homes, we have more cars, we have more money, we have more buying power. Everything is so much better for Americans. And yet the progress paradox. Studies have shown, he writes, that Americans are no more happy now than they were 50 years ago. Very simple. Once again, if you think that happiness is having what you want, you're not going to be any happier when you get more and more and more. Let's look for a second at source number 5. Famous exchange between Yaakov and Esav. Parshas Vayishlach. Yaakov hears that Esav's trying to kill him, so he gives him so many presents, so many gifts. And what does Esav say? Yesh li rav. Achi yihi locha shalach. I have what? A lot. What does Yaakov say? Yaakov says to Esav, what? Kachnas b'chasi, take my present. Asher hu vaslach, that was sent to you. Ki chanani Elokim, because God has been good to me, has been gracious to me. B'chi yesh li kol. And I have everything. And both Yaakov and Esav are very, very rich people. That's for sure. But there's a key difference. Esav, no matter how much he has, what does he say? I have a lot. What does a lot mean? I still need more. I have a lot, but not everything. There's more to get. What does Yaakov say? I've got everything I need. I don't need anything more. So here comes the next question. What in Yaakov's statement is most critical? Why is Yaakov able to look at what he has and say, I have everything? And Esav just says, I have a lot. What else does Yaakov say? Chanani Elokim. What does that mean? God has been good to me. If someone looks at everything he has and says to himself, Hashem gave me this and this and this and everything else. If a person knows, like the Ibn Ezra said, that everything you get comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then you view life as if you have everything. Because you know Hashem gives me whatever he decides I need. Whatever he doesn't give me, I don't need it. Whatever he does give me, I do need it. So what do I have? have everything. And Esav, who doesn't say Hanani Elokim, he doesn't see God in his life. What does he see that he has? I've got a lot, but what do I need? More and more and more and more, and he'll pursue happiness until the day he dies. Now we understand why Lo Sachmut is so important. Why is Lo Sachmut so important? If I ask you that question again, why is it number 10 on the list of the Aseret Dibros? Why is it one of the top 10 that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides to tell me right away at Har Sinai? What would the answer be? Anybody want to guess? Or suggest a formulation? Why is Lo Sachmut now so important that it's one of the Aseret Dibros? Another brave girl here. Another one. Okay, the same one. What's your name? Tova, go ahead. Because Hashem gives you what you need, excellent. What the Pasuk is telling us, why Lo Sachmut is so important, is because Lo Sachmut means you have to recognize that everything you have comes from Hashem. That's why it's so important. The Pasuk is telling us, I want you to know that everything you have comes from Hashem. Whatever you don't have, Hashem decided you don't need. And that's how you're not going to be jealous. That's why it's so critical. It's giving me a basic hashkafa on life that a Jew needs to have every day of his life. Excellent, Tova. But there's along those lines. Thank you so much. That same hashkafa of recognizing Hashem's role in my life also contributes to my happiness in another sense, in another way. And that is through the midah of bitachon. When a person sees Hashem's role in his life every day, in everything that he has, and everything that happens to him or to her, that also leads to a certain sense of joy, of comfort, of peace of mind. What's that pasuk we say in Hodu every day? Vani b'chastecha v'tachti. I trust in your kindness. And therefore, what happens then? The next word in the pasuk? Yagel libi. What does that mean? My heart is happy. I rejoice. Why do I rejoice? What happened? What causes my rejoicing? Vani b'chastecha v'tachti. When I have bitachon, when I see Hashem's role in my life, when I have in mind what we said before, that everything that happens to me is from Hashem, I have bitachon, Hashem is controlling what happens to me, then yagel libi. That also leads to simcha, to happiness, to peace of mind. And in fact, if you read this line from the Chovas HaLevavos, he says exactly that. He says, what is the purpose of bitachon? We all speak about bitachon. Trust that Hashem decides that what ever happens to me will happen to me. He decides what happens to who and where and when. The Chovas HaLevavos says the purpose of bitachon, one of the benefits of bitachon, is menuchas halev, is peace of mind, midagos ha'alamios. From what? From worry. There's a lot to worry about in the world. And if there isn't, there one day will be more. Just the way life is. Responsibility brings life. Brings worry. And with that comes sometimes lack of peace of mind. What gives me peace of mind? The bitachon. The trust that Hashem decides what happens to me. That gives me simcha, that gives me bitachon. Now, where in the Torah does the Torah say have bitachon? Is there any pasuk that says have bitachon? That's a pretty basic idea, right? Bitachon is one of the most important midos a person has to be thinking about all the time. Where's the pasuk for it? It's in source number 8. The Shaarei Teshuvah tells us, pasuk says in Sefer Devarim, when you go out to battle against your enemy, you see their horses, their chariots, many, many enemy soldiers. Don't be afraid, says the pasuk. So the Shaarei Teshuvah says, that's where the Torah tells us that if you see anything dangerous that could possibly happen, any threats, anything you're worried about, have bitachon. Trust Hashem will decide what happens and will do its best. Perhaps some of you remember a year and a half ago, Israeli soldiers were fighting a terrible war in Gaza against the terrorists, going house to house, trying to kill the Arab terrorists who were shooting at them, firing missiles at Jewish children and civilians. And they wrote, I received an email from a brother of someone in my shul who was in Israel at the time and heard a report from one of the chayalim who had been in Gaza, who described what it was like as the Jewish soldiers went in to fight for their lives, for the lives of Am Yisrael in Gaza. And he said about 100 soldiers in his unit, they're about to enter in the border, cross the border into Gaza. And no one knew whether they would come out alive or not. And their commander was a frum commander. He gathers them around. He takes out a chumash. He reads this pasuk. Ki tzitzela melchama levecha v'reisa sus v'rechev amrav mimcha lo tira mehem. Don't be afraid. He reads this pasuk. He says out Shema Yisrael, and everyone else says Shema Yisrael after him. And then as they're about to cross the border, he says, everyone take a pair of tzitzis. And all the religious soldiers already had. All the non-religious soldiers took a pair of tzitzis, put them on as they went into Gaza. And they were in Gaza for 48 hours straight. And when they came out, every one of those soldiers was back, tzitzis hanging out from under his clothing. They were sweaty, they were filthy, they were disheveled, they were worn out, they were exhausted. But their tzitzis were flapping around their legs as they came back into Israel. Because it's this pasuk of Bitachon, that gives a Jew the strength and the comfort and the peace of mind to face even the most terrible dangers. That's why the Baal Shem Tov says on this famous pasuk in Tehillim, Shivisi Hashem l'negdi samad. What does that mean, Shivisi Hashem? Shivisi Hashem, what does that pasuk mean? Anybody want to take a guess? Educated guess? Shivisi Hashem l'negdi samad? Any other customers? It means I place Hashem opposite me always. The Baal Shem Tov says, you know what Shivisi also means? It means Shave. What does Shave mean? It's equal, smooth, equilibrium, calmness. When a person sees Hashem in his life always, he himself becomes more smoothened out, more calm. Equilibrium, no worries, less worries. Tell you a story that happened to the Brisker Rav, Rav Yitzchak Zev Soloveitchik, who died around 1960. Famous Gadol Talmud Chacham. And he, during World War II, was living in Brisk. When the Germans invaded Poland, he fled to Vilna. Then the Russians came in and took over Vilna. And he was desperately trying to get to Israel from Vilna in 1940. And he got himself a visa to go to Israel. He got his oldest son, Beryl, a visa to go to Israel. His younger son, David, didn't need a visa because he was under 18, so he was included in his father's visa. But his daughter, Lifsha, was over 18 and didn't have a visa. Couldn't get out. What's he going to do? So he decided to lie. He filed an application saying that Lifsha is really under 18. She's David's twin. Today it's Reb David. She said she's David's twin. They're both under 18. They're included on my visa. And he filed that application with the Soviet communist authorities. And he waited for approval to come. Then one day he gets a message, you're wanted at the KGB office. In those days it was the NKVD. And everyone knew that if you're called to the KGB office, you're most likely, if you get out alive, will end up living in Siberia as a slave the rest of your life. And the family was terrified. So the Brisker Rav takes one of his students that morning, wearing his talis and tefillin, walks into the KGB office. And the communist KGB officer says to him, I tracked down your kid's birth certificates. Lipscher was born in Warsaw. David was born in Brisk. You're a liar. And the Briskrov student was terrified. they're going to shoot us both. And the Briskarov immediately responds, what's wrong with you? They're twins. They're both born in Warsaw. I got one birth certificate in Warsaw, and the other one I got later when I moved to Brisk. What's the big deal? And the KGB man was so taken aback. He said, oh, okay. I'm sorry. You're approved. You can go. And when they walked out, this Talmud, who was trembling in fear, said, Rebbe, how did you respond so quickly, so calmly, so on the spot, so how'd you do that? And the Briskarov said, you're asking that question because you were scared. Shivisi Hashem l'negdi samed. If you have bitachon, if you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching over you always, no need to be scared. Whatever happens, happens for the best. That's bitachon. That gives a person a sense of menuchas hanefesh, peaceful state of mind, happiness, tranquility. The truth is, even when things don't always turn out so well, bitachon can also give someone happiness. Some of you might know a woman by the name of Adina Kurtz, who lived in Queens, who died a year and a half ago. I knew her because we grew up in Toronto together. We were in the same kindergarten class in Eitz Chaim School in Toronto. And she unfortunately had cancer for 9 years. She was suffering terribly before she died. And when I was at the Shiva house speaking to her father, he showed me something remarkable. This is a photocopy of it. It's a poem she wrote, written on a prescription pad of one of the drugs that I guess she was taking. And the poem says, just read some of it, Hashem, you have given me happiness. Its depth sees no end. You are like a father, mother, brother, sister, and best friend. I never feel alone with you by my side. He gives me the courage and hope to have bitachon, that is why. Which is pretty amazing. This is a woman who's suffering so terribly. But because I never feel alone with you by my side, because she said she visi Hashem anegdi samit, she saw Hashem every day in her life. She saw Hashem like a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, and best friend. And Hashem gives her the courage to have bitachon that is wide. That's why she said, Hashem, you have given me happiness. Its depth sees no end. So when you have bitachon, you see Hashem is the one who gives me everything that I have. And everything that happens to me is from Hashem. Doesn't matter what it is. A person has peace of mind. And that bitachon gives a person a certain sense of happiness. A comforting sense of having a friend by my side. I'll share with you one last very important lesson. The last pasuk on the source sheet, source number 10. It's a pasuk in Megillas Eicha. What does Megillas Eicha describe? Destruction, churban, suffering, galus. What does the pasuk say? Kumi roni balaila. Get up and cry out at night about the babies that are dying from hunger in the streets. Pretty, pretty sad. Sad event. And what does the word roni mean? To cry out. But what does it also mean? Roni is related to what word? Rina, sing. Correct? Rina, sing. Any Rinas here in the crowd? No Rinas here? Okay, I have a Rina at home. I did not name her Rina because I was crying when she was born. I named her Rina because we were happy when she was born. So the question then is, if Rina is a word that means song and happiness, why is it used here in a pasuk that's speaking about sad things? The answer is one that is so, so important. And here it is. The answer is, because even when there are some things in life that aren't perfect, and you can be upset about something that happens, you can be angry about something that happens, maybe it's really bad, maybe it's not so bad, but sometimes things don't go exactly as we hope. Maybe you feel like crying. But Roni teaches us that there's always so much more in life that I can be happy about and sing about. That's a very important lesson. Even if something isn't great, but look at everything else. My family, my health, my friends. There's so much more in life, life itself, to be happy about and to sing about. Ivdu es Hashem b'simcha. The fact that we are alive and can do mitzvot and can serve Hashem is the greatest reason to be happy. I'll tell you one last story. This is about Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal. Any of the girls ever hear of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik? Yes? Good. Okay. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal was a tremendous gadol b'Torah and Rosh Hashiva in this country. And when he was 65 years old, he suffered a terrible stroke, which left him virtually paralyzed on his left side. And for the last 18 years of his life, he never used his left arm anymore. It just stayed behind his back, vibrating. Couldn't use it at all. His left leg, after the stroke, he couldn't walk. He spent months, even years, going through painful therapy, trying to learn how to walk again. And even after he's able to walk, it was only one step at a time. We just walk without thinking about it. When he would walk, he'd have to concentrate so that he shouldn't fall. And when he walked, it was one step, and then the pain, another step, stop for a rest. And again, one step at a time. And I'll never forget, for as long as I live, when I was visiting him as a young child, younger than you, I was about maybe 8, 9 years old, shortly after his stroke. I was in his house. And I suddenly heard him singing. I was wondering, why is he singing? I walked into the room where he was, and I saw he was in tremendous pain, undergoing a treatment. And he saw the pain on his face, but he didn't hear it in his voice, because he was singing, Ashreinu matov chalkeinu, how happy we are, how fortunate we are. He was singing, Baruch Hu Elokeinu Shebranu Lechvodo, blessed is Hashem who created us to do what He wants us to do. He was singing, Ode Lakel Levav Choker, I give thanks to Hashem. And even when he would walk and he'd be in pain, he would sing those same songs. I always wondered, how is it possible for a man like that who's suffering so terribly to sing songs of Rina, of joy, even as he's suffering? You know what the answer is? Because rather than think about and focus on the things that weren't so good in his life, he always thought about the wonderful things in his life. The fact that he could still do Torah and mitzvos and chesed, the fact that he had a family, a job, he was able to continue to function. He thought about everything that was good in life. And when you think about what's good in life, even if there are some things that aren't so good in life, then you can sing songs of Rina of joy. So I'll leave you with two quick thoughts of review. Number one, the Sachmor is so important because it teaches us that happiness is not having what you want, rather it's what? Wanting what you have. And recognizing that everything that we have is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, because that's all I need. And number two, even when there are some things in life that make us not so happy, there are always what? So many other things in life to make us so much more happier, to sing songs of Rina. Thank you so very much.